When your league loses its one of its best players ever and also one of its best rappers ever, it's That's So MLS, the North American Soccer Podcast that is now, we can happily report, in its second year. We're recording this on a Thursday. We released our first episode on the 26th of August last year. So happy anniversary.
Happy podversary. Nick
Thornton.
Yeah, oh right, yeah. My name. Hi, I'm Nick. Yeah, whatever. People must know by now. Yeah, it's been a whole year, which seems really kind of bizarre to me in a way. In some ways it feels like just yesterday, in some ways it feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. I mean, like, this year has definitely flown by for me for a lot of ways. And, like, definitely things like, didn't we just do an All-Star game? What is this? Is it the Champions League time already?
Well, and it's also weird that, like, I lost my train of thought because I was opening up our That's So MLS Instagram page, which, by the way, you should follow.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to look up the Colorado Rapids player that followed us, his name, but then I was scrolling past and saw that David Osted also liked our message to him about a speedy recovery, and I got distracted and I have no idea what I was talking about.
Because
David Osted.
David Osted. What a guy.
But yeah, it's, I don't think we might have missed maybe 1 or 2 weeks out of the whole year last year, but otherwise I think even through the off season, we did one every week.
I think in the off season it was bi-weekly.
Oh, is that right?
No.
Well,
I can't remember because we're not on 50, because we're not on 52.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't even know what episode number we're on. We're on episode 45. So we must have missed 6 weeks in there somewhere.
DFC did have an interesting week, kind of up and down in some ways. They brought all of their brilliance to bear in Montreal, and then or at home against Montreal, and then it's hard to read exactly what went wrong. I feel like rotation robbed them of some stability again in a 2-0 loss to Portland.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, considering the skid that Portland was on, it was a great result for them to go out and just snatch things back in their favor. And boy, the West is looking awfully congested these days.
Yeah, so starting with that first one, I think you definitely see in the first half, Montreal's big issue. Like, they've got a lot going on offensively. The addition of Quincy Amerikwa has been great. But the defense is still really easy to pick apart. And it feels like some of those goals, the first one where Sebastian Giovinco is just caught with a pass, caught with a great outlet pass, and then the second one where he's able to cut through defenders. It seems like the defense is moving so slowly. It's like, you know, such a strolling pace.
Yeah, and really, you know, as tight as things are in the West, and I think you could argue for some of the bottom, not the bottom spots, but the last playoff spots, rather, in the East are quite tight as well, I ultimately think does come down to just the poor defending that's happening in both conferences, that there's very few teams that have been consistently good in terms of not leaking goals, and all of those teams have still at points, with the exception perhaps of Atlanta and New York City, really not been blown out much this season. But there's very, very few teams that have maintained a really strong defensive stance. The interesting thing, I think, is that one of the worst teams near the bottom has been Toronto, but they haven't conceded buckets of goals per game. They've just been not scoring goals, or up until a few weeks ago.
They've just had this, they've had a real difficulty getting results. It's like, it's not like they're always bad on defense, although in Portland there were some pretty big shockers. Michael Bradley worked as a defensive midfielder that could slot back into defense, like, a little bit last season, and he is not a center back. He's not.
No. And it is, I feel like it's kind of, we've talked about this before, but it's kind of unfair to lump all the criticism on him when the back line was in tatters and you really didn't have too many other options. Mm-hmm. Michael Bradley looks like a good one, but he was playing center back like he plays center mid. He lunges in too soon, maybe a little too aggressive on some of the plays as well. And yeah, he's not a center back. So to say he's shit at center back is kind of redundant.
He got really picked apart on, like, that second goal, which, I mean, I don't feel like in the, like, Toronto had a lot going forward, so it's not as though, like, it's a huge loss. But at the same time, they could have potentially pulled a result out of that game. He really seemed exposed, and he got pickpocketed.
And did Altidor play in this game? What's going on with him?
Altidor received a two-match ban for his, he received a one-match ban that was increased to three matches for his, the crazy thing he did a couple weeks ago, I believe.
I've already forgotten what crazy thing he did, but it sounds like Altidor to do a crazy thing.
There was like a late game, tackle for no reason that made no sense.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, I remember that play.
I'm trying to remember what the game was, but I without looking, that would be my understanding of what the deal was.
Right. Coming hot take, Jozy Altidore matters a great deal to Toronto FC, and without him, they're still a good team, but just not a team that's really capable of finishing games and getting crucial results. And the second game, too, I thought was also a really good showing from Portland to show that they can snap that streak. They had a couple, or a sort of string of, I believe, four or five games that were not great, including some pretty big shit-in-the-bed moments. But, as we've seen with the Sounders as well, they're a resilient team and can turn things around when they need to. And as a Whitecaps fan, I don't like it, but as a fan of soccer and competition, I like that we've got, you know, four or so points between six or seven places in the Western Conference right now.
Yeah, it's like the teams that are right now on the bubble, like teams that I would say are realistically in some real danger of losing their playoff places, are like only six places behind first. Only 6 points behind first. Which is wild.
And here's the thing is, like, I guess it could be read multiple ways, and I'll just briefly step onto my MLS soapbox for a second, is that for a league that still takes so much flack from other leagues, it's certainly one of the most equal leagues and certainly one of the most competitive leagues, at least in terms of any team can win it, in the world right now.
Yeah.
And sure, is it because of shoddy defense a lot of the time? Yes. But if you're a fan of soccer, it's still great to think that regardless of where your team stands right now, from week to week, they can win it. And we've seen that. There's no team in MLS that can't be beat. There's lots of teams that can't be beat easily, or teams that just have an off week, like Atlanta, that they're not going to lose too many games. But as the quality of teams across the league increases so much every year, you know, it's totally reasonable to say in 2 years' time, Atlanta could be at the bottom of the table and DC United could be running things. Like, that's the kind of up and down sort of thing we've come to expect. And yeah, it's frustrating at times, but it's also exciting to think that if you're a San Jose Earthquakes fan and you've watched your team sputter and falter all year long, you can go in against, you know, the previous Supporter Shield runners and get a massive 3 points out of it.
And that, like, for all, like, the concerns of, like, you know, does the playoff system remove legitimacy or any of that, that allows teams to, like, seem like characters, because the more interesting results you have, the more, you know, emotional engagements fans of one team having other teams, right? Mm-hmm. That's the that's the big issue, is that, like, you know, and you were talking about, like, you know, anyone, not only does it, anyone has the ability to win in any given year. So it's not only is that so many teams have the option of winning this year, but I feel like they're not, like, teams don't go on multi-year skids, but it's like the option is available. A team, any, if you look at, well, I know, Colorado, San Jose, Chicago, Orlando, mm-hmm. With tweaks, those can all be playoff teams next year.
Yep.
Will they always make the tweaks? It's really up to them to seize that potential. But there are not a lot of leagues where you could say, you know, the team on the bottom is, like, just as possible to make the playoffs as the team that finished first.
Absolutely. And, you know, for the first 6 months of the season, we talked about, you know, the bottom feeders like DC United. And, you know, that now they're within 6 points of a playoff spot. And knowing what can happen in this league, sure, they've got Toronto nipping at their heels, and the games in hand doesn't matter so much anymore, but they still have two games in hand over Toronto. Yeah. It's entirely conceivable that this team that everybody was writing off and couldn't do anything will take that sixth final playoff spot, not just from Toronto, but from Montreal as well. And in the West, who knows? Yeah. I mean, it's definitely... I really do feel like it is a real battle for that sixth spot. You'd hope the Whitecaps are comfortable sitting 8 points above the next closest team, which is Minnesota.
You can say a lot of things about, you know, our midseason transfer is like a great idea, but like it really makes for entertaining seasons. Because it's like, who starts at the beginning of it? Like, you know, LA's always going to sign everyone, so this Letton thing is a surprise. But, like, I don't know who could have predicted where DC has ended up now. In a narrative place, not necessarily a standings place, but from a narrative place, it's like, oh, yeah, this season's going to go great once we sign Wayne Rooney. Like, nobody was, like, you know, just sort of walking in and doing that.
All of a sudden also unlocked the potential of players like Acosta, who'd been there from the beginning of the season, but just hadn't quite found the form. Or players like Darren Maddox, who'd been kind of, he's been productive all season, but he's been, you know, more or less the lone goal scorer for the team. But you add one crucial piece and everything comes together. But as we saw last year with Chicago, you can add one crucial piece and everything comes together, and then the next season things can fall apart. So the frustrating thing I think for fans is the consistency from year to year. But I mean, if you're a coach or a manager in this league, it's really hard to assess what kind of talent other teams are going to be bringing in. You can look at LAFC that had a, you know, just ran completely amok at the beginning of the season and were the talk of the town, and now have really, really struggled and conceded an enormous amount of goals, and they just lost their captain and best center back and defender.
They've been interesting because of the player acquisition strategy, in the way that they pick up forwards the same way that I buy books at a bookstore. Like, every time I walk into the bookstore, I'm like, I need that one, I need that one, I need that one.
Right. I haven't read Christian Ramirez before. Let's put him in. Go ahead.
No, go, go.
I was going to say, meanwhile, perhaps spending just a little bit of that money on a center back depth might have been a good idea.
Nope. I've just got a stack of 7 unread center forwards.
Who can't play any other position.
But yeah, that's a thing worth noting, that Laurent Simon has gone to Dijon. Strange, because I really felt that he was, you know, LAFC has had some issues defensively, and he's really been an anchor to that whole back line. So it's bad for the team, but I kind of feel, in a sense, that the trade away from, or not the trade, but the trade and the circumstances in which Simon left Montreal really soured him from, like, a life perspective. He did his best, but, like, I mean, just what I see from some of the quotes that I've seen, it's like, I can imagine that, like, you know, once your life is uprooted like that, you need to make some, like, new decisions. If you if you weren't planning to move cities, and then you have this option to go back to Europe, you might just take it.
No, and I mean, I didn't see any numbers attached to it. I know Simon is an older player, so I don't know what how that will shape up. But it could have really significant impacts for LAFC, because he has been such a rock for them. He hasn't just been good at center back; he's also been one of their best goal scorers this year at certain stretches.
That's correct.
So,
despite,
you know,
the fact that they have so many unread forwards,
exactly, and they're not safe at 43 points, which is kind of ridiculous to say at this point in the season. But, you know, Real Salt Lake, which, this is insane. Real Salt Lake is 5 points behind first place in the Western Conference. That's not a storyline we were talking about a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think that it's them and San Jose have been in the position to develop themselves and sort of advance up, and they've both capitalized on that in different ways.
Yes, definitely.
In that one of them has not capitalized on it.
Yeah, they have different approaches, in that one is good and one is bad.
Yes. Vancouver, kind of speaking of San Jose, Vancouver has started the first of a home-at-home series, which you see, which you don't actually see all that often, but I suppose that I understand they're the only one that the Caps play three times, so I guess you just got to jam this game in somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of their come-behind win?
Well, I'll take full credit for it, because I wasn't able to watch it, which is usually where the Vancouver, where the Whitecaps turn out a great performance. I was at dinner, but I was getting texts from my mom, but I've since caught myself up on it. I mean, it's great news. I don't know quite what the thing is, why Vancouver has to dig themselves a hole to perform, and why they can't just go there and close the back door and come away with a 3-0 win. But I feel like most Whitecaps fans at this point are either resigned to the fact that we're not going to make the playoffs, or we're going to make the playoffs, but we're not going to solve this conceding goal problem this season. And right now, it really is just about score as many goals as you can, fight till the end, and hope for the best. But, like, why even bother trying to, like, really tighten things and get a clean sheet? Which is so unfortunate, because I really do feel like it lets down Marinovic, who I think has made very few mistakes this season overall and has been excellent. But, you know, the first two goals from San Jose, again, they're mistakes. These aren't unavoidable things. This is still there being a massive gap with the defensive mids being able to push up on top of the box. It's rinse and repeat stuff. The positive from it is the turnaround, where San Jose just relaxes a little bit and loses concentration. And then I believe it's Reyna who kind of begins the march forward. And a tidy bit of business from Kamara in the end to get the winning goal. It's still hard to feel like you can really get excited about a road win where you have to go down 2-0. Because there's just been far too much of this kind of thing. And better teams can and will punish us in those games. And have.
I'm willing to take it for a key reason, which is that, like, I don't know what the ratings were like on this particular one, but being an away one that maybe a lot of people would have been able to see, these kind of come behind results are what get people on the boat, you know, like that's, Seeing a 2-0 turn into a 3-2 is like what got me into Tottenham Hotspur all those years ago. So it can be a tremendous thing. I was not able to see the game live. Hilariously, my partner Lauren was watching the game and was able to, and was sort of like turned it off in the 50th minute, just like, this is over. And then, or like for whatever reason, and then all of the goals were scored after that.
I feel like that's a thing that's happened more than once this season for our beloved Whitecaps.
Mm-hmm. Especially with both of the goals, from San Jose coming so earlier, mm-hmm. early, and one of them coming from a penalty kick.
Yeah.
I was wrong on one thing. San Jose did play on Wednesday.
They did, and I just realized this as well, and then it makes me a little worried because, of course, Vancouver's playing them this Saturday at home, but San Jose came away with a massive victory against an FC Dallas, which they seem to forget that they're good. And I think it's over the span of about 18 to 20 minutes, 5 goals are scored between the two teams.
That's crazy.
This game was buck wild. Like, watching it back, it's just, there's 2-3 minutes max between goals. And Dallas goes up early and looks very much in control. But it was like watching San Jose play San Jose. The defending was so off the mark for Dallas. And for a team that's first in the West right now, it's just so unfathomable to think that you've got... There are 26 points between FC Dallas and San Jose Earthquakes.
Yes.
Dallas with 46 and San Jose with 20. And somehow... And Dallas has a pretty good defensive record in the league. And yet somehow, some way, San Jose beat them 4-3. So I don't know what to make of that. It does bring me to... Sorry, go ahead.
This is the point, you know, in addition to the idea that anybody can win, the league possesses, like, nothing like logic, where it's like... Portland, it's like Vancouver beats Portland and then beats San Jose, who beats Dallas, and then Portland beats Toronto. Like, none of the results suggest any kind of, like, hierarchy.
No. Truly, it doesn't, and that's where it's always a bit of a toss-up, but yeah, we'll see. Vancouver's got a big task now, because I think... You know, first of all, the Earthquakes are going to feel pretty hard done by that they lost at home and capitulated that 2-0 lead they had. And to be on fire for beating the first team in the West 4-3, they still gave up a lot of goals. I feel like that's the thing with San Jose and the Rapids, is that if you can pile it on at a certain point, they just don't have much in them. And it was an interesting game because it was... Dallas and San Jose trading goals. It wasn't a massive comeback. But the Whitecaps certainly have their work cut out for them, and I'm sure will be well aware of the threat that San Jose possesses.
Speaking of RSL, they had a big result that you were able to lay your eyes on.
They had a little bit of a result earlier in the week. Yeah, they sure did. So if folks don't know, there's this thing called the Rocky Mountain Cup. I believe it's just between Colorado and Real Salt Lake, but I'd love to know if there's another team included in that, but I feel like not.
There's a couple of ones like that, like the Trillium Cup between Toronto and Columbus, the El Capitan, cannon that goes on between, Dallas and Houston.
Yeah. But the 6-0 blowout of Colorado by Real Salt Lake. Now, it's fantastic for Real Salt Lake's momentum, but I feel like the scoreline kind of belies what happened here. Because in the 10th or 17th minute, somewhere in there, Jackson gets sent off on a pretty dubious red card. And that just kind of kills the game. And granted, Colorado Rapids did their best Colorado Rapids impersonation here, where they just looked awful. And RSL had all the momentum pouring forward and were able to get something out of it. And then I think it's in like the 57th minute or so, Colorado gets another player sent off, which does look like a red. But this is kind of one of those ones where you go, if you take away the first dubious red card, maybe the second one doesn't happen. Maybe results go differently. But I feel like it was inevitable RSL was going to take this one. But to have such an emphatic finish on it and take advantage of that is only going to help their momentum as they continue their playoff push. They're doing a good job of securing their spot up there. If LAFC falter,
yeah, it's
again, they're 5 points behind Dallas.
The importance, I think, is really on keeping control of the game, right? And that's why, you know, regardless of, like, that's why making sure that, you know, you don't have a dubious red is so important. Because if a result inflames a player's emotions, there's going to be only more when that came from.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who they're playing next. My internet has seemed to be a little spotty here, but I'm going to try to look up and see who they're up against.
RSL has LA at home.
All right. Well, and Ibra's out because he slapped someone, right? So that could actually work.
This is something that was interesting to me. Now that we've seen the back of quote unquote rivalry week, do you think it? Like, I mean, I guess I don't know that it always works as an attempt to, you know, gin up interest, or I think it's pretty transparent as a marketing strategy. But some of the games are good. I mean, is LAFC, LA Galaxy a real rivalry now?
I mean, sure. No, I do think fans have taken to it. The funny thing is that the two LA teams are so similar that, you know, the character of both teams is relatively based around the same thing. So I'm sure it will become a big rivalry. But the funny thing is that for me, rivalries are based on history. So to say like, oh, there are our rivals, we've played them twice, to me, doesn't really do it. You know, I see Colorado Real Salt Lake as a rivalry.
This is the sort of thing where you start off. I do like your description of them as the same, because it's a rivalry game. It's like where the two Spider-Mans are pointing at each other. the meme. I guess you start a rivalry by having somebody come on the scene and make a challenge, you know? Things like this will help build it up. It's hard not... I don't know. I haven't seen the game. I haven't seen the footage. I can't say for sure. But this is the sort of thing you would want to happen if you were trying to build a little animosity between the two teams. So maybe it was savvy either way. The other one, the rivalry game that I was able to see was New York City versus New York Red Bulls, which ended in a 1-1 draw. But I thought that it was actually quite an entertaining back and forth. I thought that I caught on around halftime when Red Bulls were up a goal with Bradley Wright Phillips. Mm-hmm. But you kind of had a 1-1 draw with Bradley Wright Phillips and David Villa scoring. So it's like the two talismans of each team stepping up.
Yeah, no, that was super great to see. I mean, I didn't see the game. This is probably the part of the episode where we should reveal that neither of us saw many games.
No, but it was good. The biggest thing about this game was that New York City had two players sent off, and yet was able to come back and hold the result, which kind of makes would seem unfortunate for the Red Bulls because, you know, they're while they're playing away, in a sense, you would think that there would be more away supporters because there didn't seem to be that many away supporters, but it's not a far trip from New Jersey to Yankee Stadium.
You may want to rethink those words. New York fans, if you're listening from either team, I recognize that there's about 1,000 miles between New Jersey and New York City, but it's fine.
It's a path. I did it. There's a train called the path. I took it. So could you.
That's true. another team that had a really great week was our pals at Philadelphia Union. Picked up 6 points out of the week, which is not a bad bit of business, and put them 6 points clear of Montreal Impact.
Nice, and I mean those are key, especially in a week where the Impact took that L from Toronto. Mm-hmm. These are all crucial points, especially if you want to say who's going to, as we look at sort of the games in hand competition in terms of who is gonna, who has points to make up. Philadelphia putting some distance behind between it and Montreal, as it has a game in, Philadelphia has a game in hand on Montreal, and mm-hmm. the teams behind Montreal have New England has 2 games in hand on it. DC has 3 games in hand on it. It is best to get yourself as far away from that situation as possible, and Philadelphia did themselves a favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm so fascinated to just see who's going to end up in the playoffs and how things are going to shake out in the East, just as much as the West. I feel like last year, I still definitely favored the Western Conference and found it a little bit more interesting, despite there maybe being a little bit more competition in the East. But there, you know, with different teams in the shake this year, I'm fascinated to see. I think Philadelphia is getting real close to cementing their position in the playoffs, and it's going to be really interesting to see with that added competitive atmosphere who they go up against. Because right now, I forget how the seeding works, but it would be, is it like the 3 bottom teams get seeded together, or the top 3, or is it like 1 and 4 and 2 and 5? Like,
I forget. Oh, I do remember it being, I thought it was a 2-team wild card, but you're right, I think it is a 4-team wild card.
Right, yeah, the top 2 get automatic passage. But right now, looking at it, if the playoffs were tomorrow, and I don't like doing this because I'm good at math and predicting the future in soccer especially, but if you were to take NYCFC and Columbus, Philadelphia, and Montreal, you have to think, like, Philadelphia can certainly beat Montreal, and they can certainly beat Columbus. And, you know, New York City over 2 legs, maybe at some point they could do it.
It's a great addition, and just even having a strong playoff run is great to establish itself in the market.
Yeah. It's also, isn't it just completely insane to think for the year that Atlanta has had, they're still somehow now in second. And even though it feels like the Red Bulls have had a shakier season and given up more, they actually haven't. They've been extremely tight defensively and are now the supporter shield runners.
And you don't think of them as a defensive team by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that that's the thing, is that because the Red Bulls have been so dominant, and you know, we've been following that so closely, anytime they have lost a game, it's like, oh my God, they lost a game. But when we see a negative, it's kind of the amount of negative that you're used to seeing over the course of the season. Not every year is going to be like last year, where it's like a contest to see by how many goals Toronto wins every time they come into a place. That even championship teams, you know, have an off week or have a moment that they need to lead, to learn from.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, I think that's what happened with Dallas this week, right? Like when you look at the goal difference of the top teams in East and West, New York Red Bulls have a goal difference of 24. That's exceptionally good. I mean, the only better team is Atlanta, but they're still a point behind. And in the West, FC Dallas is at the top of the table with an 8-goal difference. So yeah, as much as we've seen the Red Bulls give up goals this year and lose games, but again, they're not getting blown out, and not once the playoffs happen, you know, of course, goal difference doesn't count for much beyond looking at the defensive record, which is that they have the fewest goals conceded in the league.
Yeah. I'm gonna look down the list here briefly. We've got Chicago 1-1 draw with Columbus, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, Columbus needs to keep all of the points it can. Houston 1-1 Dallas in their rivalry week, El Capitan situation. Orlando lost 2-1 to Atlanta. And I believe that's the game where where Martinez broke the goal scoring record.
Who? I kid. The greatest neck tattoos in the business. Congratulations, Joseph Martinez. He's a freak of nature.
He writes his names into the leagues. History book. It seems the thing like where it's kind of it matters so much, but at the same time. It's almost like the goal. It almost feels like the record tying goal meant as much because, like, you know, there's plenty of weeks left in the season. You said it that there's not once he's equaled the record, there's no chance that he's not breaking the record.
At this point. It's not like Joseph Martinez is going to stop scoring goals. He could get another 12 easily before the playoffs. Which shows just how important of a player he is. I'm sure if you're an Atlanta United fan, you're just riding this high. I just keep going, like, the price tag's just going up and up and up. And now I'm beginning to wonder, like, what team is going to be wanting to fork out the dough for him? Because he's, what, like, 25, 24?
Mm-hmm.
If in a world where Davies is worth... whatever that final figure was in euros or Bitcoin, Joseph Martinez has got to be looking pretty close to 35, 40 million euro, which seems insane, but the prices of players these days, like that's the kind of price tag he could be fetching.
I would say it really depends on what happens in a playoff run. If you think of, I guess there's still, is the European window not closed yet? The summer window? Usually, I think it runs until August, but it might already be closed.
I think it is closed, but I don't think Martinez will go in the summer. But I mean, when the season's done, regardless, and I don't think Atlanta fans would be too butthurt if they get into the playoffs and perform well. But at this point, you know, major European clubs have to, and you know, all we've heard is whispers really have to be looking at him and thinking, you know, okay, you take him over into a European team and he scores half as many goals. That's still an incredible return on investment for a player 3 or 4 years out from his prime. And in terms of his own ambitions, something tells me he doesn't just want to be scoring 30 goals in MLS every season for the rest of his life. The ambitions are much greater. And as much as, you know, it's fun to sort of villainize him, credit to him for just being as aggressive of a striker as he is. He's an absolute monster to defend against. And, you know, very few defenders in the league have proven they're equal to the task. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a great run for him and for Atlanta United for sure. But... I cannot imagine a scenario where he's coming back next year to go, this year I'll score 50 goals.
Sporting Kansas City won 2-0 against Minnesota, which are three very, very valuable points at this point in the table.
Mm-hmm. And just a nice clean win for them as well. Like, where they've looked a little shaky, they tidied things up nicely there.
Red Bulls won 1-0 against DC again, the league changes so quickly, you never would have thought of that as anything like a marquee matchup, but this is going to be one of the first times that Wayne Rooney-headed DC matches up against the Red Bulls, so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Cascadia Cup clash with Seattle winning 1-0 away in Portland. I think it's funny, we were talking about Portland having away issues. It's funny that this all comes, or home issues, it's funny that this all comes down. They're like, they had this super long undefeated streak, and then Whitecaps beat them. And all of a sudden, they get into such problems. But I guess they've been able to pull up now.
Anything can happen. And also, I know that there's been lots of talk about the Cascadia Cup and how it kind of got obliterated this season because of the matchups. But it's still... It's fairly even at this point. It's Seattle in the lead with 6 points, Vancouver and Portland tied with 3 points. Vancouver has a game in hand, and I believe we play both Seattle and Portland before the end of the season.
Yes.
I kind of feel like this is the Sounders Cup this year for the Cascadia Cup.
Well, they're the... Especially with the new designated player... that they brought in. That's a big plus. Red Bulls in DC, after facing each other, both had matches on Wednesday. It was a busy time for the Red Bulls, who won 1-0 at home against Houston. If you're gonna look at three games in a week, certainly 7 points out of nine is no small haul.
No, it's fantastic at this point in the season.
Mm-hmm. And we chatted about Philadelphia going over DC, I think.
Yep.
Which is and that comprises the results to date. Now, the big piece of news that's broke over the last little bit is that Clint Dempsey has announced his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
From MLS, is something that you could kind of see coming, but it now gives us a chance to take stock of somebody that has been really important to the history of the league.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm not sure all the reasons. I know he had that heart thing. Was it last year? He missed out a bunch of games.
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. So sort of cautious with it, but. Say whatever you want about his season. If we're going to talk about North American soccer and we're going to talk about importance to this league, I think he's far and away been the most influential domestic player in MLS over the last decade.
Yeah.
And, okay, maybe tied with Landon Donovan on that. That's maybe a little unfair to him. But the influence that he's had on American soccer and on MLS is tremendous. And we love to villainize Dempsey as we do any good striker or white striker that likes to rap in his free time. But if we're talking about his game, I mean, he's as much of a personality as you could want in this league and something that's brought some excitement to it. But also he's been versatile. He's shown over the years how good he can be and how much of a leader he can be on the pitch. He's not the smartest player in the world all the time, but when you have somebody that can step onto a pitch and have the kind of impact he's had, I mean, he is the Seattle Sounders and has been for a long time, even when he wasn't in Seattle anymore, his shadow sort of loomed over them.
Well, this is the kind of the three stages of his career, is that he started from 2004 to 2006 with the New England Revolution, which is kind of when I started watching, when they went to the 2005 MLS Cup final and lost, and was such a key player and one of the league's early stars. And now that we exist in a completely different time in terms of player development of domestic players and what players are expected to do and not do, that he established himself as a player there, went to go play for Fulham in the Premier League, and was like one of the key. In 2007, there were not a lot of Americans there.
No.
There was Brad Friedel. I don't know if he was there at that time, but when I think of that, my early time as a soccer fan, the North Americans that were in the league was few and far between. Mm-hmm. MLS products that were in the Premier League, it was few and far between. And he was, not only was he influential in terms of that era of, so he's influential in two different eras, the idea of homegrown stars that could draw attention. He's then influential in the era of American stars can play key roles in English Premier League teams. And then he was kind of really central to the DP era of teams bringing big name signings in, and was sort of a big part of the, a really big part of the early Seattle culture because of his signing. It sort of like to bridge. I was like, I think he came after Lindbergh.
Mm-hmm.
But his
presence on the team definitely brought more attention to Seattle Sounders and brought really high quality players to the club as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And him and Bradley coming back were key moments in terms of like, are people, do top level American stars need to play in Europe in order to develop and help the U.S. men's national team succeed? Well, he was able to come back and be a star in a different sort of format.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, and this is, there are a lot of reasons for this, and I don't know that it's always fair to criticize a player for not being able to make it in Europe, but I don't think he came back with the same criticism that Landon Donovan had for not seemingly being able to make it in his European excursions. He had, during the 2016 MLS Cup season, he had his heart murmur issue.
Right.
And he really could have retired there. So it's really an amazing story that he was able to come back and contribute in some way. And it's great that he did make his return. I do kind of think that there has been no place in the team, especially after the signing of Raul Ruiz Diaz.
Yeah, which says something so much about where Seattle's put themselves and been able to turn things around. We have other news around the league. Well, not just but outside of the league as well. Sorry.
I do want to briefly just sort of touch on it because we talked about it. And this was a little bit more in the early era. What made him so hateable and also so fun was his like weirdness of like he was recording rap albums under the name Deuce and he was having these crazy goal celebrations. So it's not all sort of gritty faced, return. He was also a really fun player. And I just wanted to make sure that we got a taste of like what his persona brought to the league in those years.
Yeah, and I think we're used to seeing the unsmiling, very aggressive Clint Dempsey on the pitch, but there is a part that I agree that's just pure fun and a bit more personality than you'd expect from your average soccer star.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there was more news this week, as you were going to say, before I brought up an old rap album.
I believe there's some news from the NWSL.
Well, so it wasn't necessarily news from the NWSL. The Athletic has put out a piece today about sort of issues involving the working conditions at many USL teams, as that league has kind of grown in number without growing kind of in stature, partially because the NASL has collapsed. That there are real varying amounts of quality in terms of how those clubs have run, which of course brought to mind the fact that Sky Blue FC has been, their facilities have been, there have been real issues with those that were also revealed in pieces earlier this year that still haven't been fixed. So it's an interesting piece to take a look at. It is, as we are looking at the how to structure the second division as NASL kind of goes away, that just sort of piling more teams into USL is not always the best strategy. And it's mm-hmm. also important because I think that when we talk about the second division and we talk about the Canadian Premier League, which we're all very excited about, that we keep him and he's having open tryouts actually coming up soon across the country. But we can keep in mind that past a certain level, that like is basically the top two thirds of an MLS team, it's really hard to be a soccer player in North America. Like we have this mode of like what being a pro sports star is in North America. And like, I've talked to people in terms of, you know, I've done interviews with players when they're trying to talk about whether or not they want to do USL. And they're like, do I want to like ride a bus multiple days a week for a living, or do I want to work at Scotiabank? And like, it's a choice for people. And I think it's something we should keep in mind as we're thinking of how these things are set up is to really appreciate how much work goes into it and how unglamorous it can be sometimes.
Absolutely. And unsafe as well. You know, when you think about the types of care, the quality care that top players in even MLS are getting, and the resources poured in, and then you've got other professional athletes playing in completely unsafe conditions with, you know, virtually no access to even like insurance, mm-hmm. Where your livelihood is based on whether or not you can physically get out of bed and play. It is deeply concerning. And if we want the sport to grow, we can't just, you know, highlight this league at the top that everybody's paying attention to now. And to me, I'm not a football fan, an American football fan, but it sort of mirrors that college professional dichotomy where you've got the NFL where all the money goes. And then you've got college level athletes who are the best at what they do in the world who don't get paid. And yeah. Suffer injuries. They're not covered by insurance. They're not compensated in any sort of way. They just, you know, put everything, their whole lives into it. And similarly are just treated like a product. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no. I was going to make one more point because I was going to transition from this.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of soccer sometimes treating things like a product, there was also the issue of the Austin thing. The in addition to the stadium stuff, there was a little bit of a furor over the fact that they unveiled a logo, despite the fact they're ostensibly still negotiating. And the logo had a very similar... It's a tree, and a lot of Columbus... A green tree on a black field. Now, a lot of Columbus fans noted that it was kind of similar to their TIFO that they put up that was like, grow the roots. Mm-hmm. Which, like, you couldn't slap them in the face harder.
No, and the thing that I keep coming back to this and having a somewhat limited understanding of what's going on in Columbus and in San Antonio is...
Austin,
sorry. Why did I keep thinking San Antonio? Two different places. Is that you've got all these teams vying for entry into MLS, going through the bid process, and yet an ownership can just decide to pick up and leave and move the team to a new city. So mm-hmm. to me, it's also kind of a slap in the face of like the Cincinnati's who have carefully, slowly built this thing and put in very careful bids to get MLS franchises. And then an ownership can just decide after, you know, decades in the league and being an important fixture that they can just uproot a team and move it somewhere else, and that's just fine, and kind of skip the queue. And I get capitalism is a thing.
I'm aware of, let's let it be known that this program is aware of capitalism.
We are definitely aware of capitalism, especially in sports. But it just seems really, really unfair. And I have, to me, the only positive takeaway I can have from it is that fans on both sides seem upset of how things are going down. That, mm-hmm. You know, nobody wants to see a new team at the expense of Columbus, it feels like.
No. Hashtag save the crew.
Hashtag save the crew. And also, the logo I think looks all right. And I'm all for a tree logo in sports. I am. But the fucking color is a little obnoxious. Mm. It is the most violent fluorescent green I've seen in a soccer logo. And that includes Seattle Sounders. So that's saying
something. Also, we don't need any more primary black color logos.
We really don't. We really, really don't.
The one point that was highlighted about this was that there's a weird rivalry going on between like Austin fans and Columbus fans, where Austin fans are telling Columbus fans to shut up. There's no, and like Columbus fans are, I think, kind of understandably mad at Austin fans. There's nobody that's against more soccer teams. Well, no. I mean, like, you could qualify that statement, but like, nobody is saying that we dislike the people of Austin or we don't want Austin to have a team. Austin fans should support a league that has a healthy growth strategy. In addition to the hashtag save the crew, where can we find you online?
Oh, yeah. You can find me online on Instagram, That's So MLS, and on Twitter, also at That's So MLS. Where can we find you?
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. You can find this podcast at thatsomls.com on iTunes and wherever podcasts are found. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much, Nick, for a wonderful first year of soccer podcasting. I've been very excited about it, and I'm very also excited to see where we go in year two. Well, your first tweet that brought up this idea was, you said, why aren't we already doing a soccer podcast? So, you know, I think we really have just righted a wrong in the universe that podcast did not already exist.
You're welcome, world.
Until the next week, with all of my excitement, congratulations, and celebrations, don't get sent off.